This is the Horse Radio Network. I'm Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Wendy Ying from Sarasota, Florida. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 7th, 2019. This episode is brought to you by the American Driving Society. Good morning, horse world!
We're trying to talk really fast today, so you don't have to speed it up.
The millennials. Listen to everything double speed.
Double speed.
Take less time.
Because it takes a lot less time. We have so many guests today that I think we're just going to talk this way the whole time.
Today's show.
Team
USA's newest gold medalist, Mary Phelps, recaps the World Pony Championships. Tony Troyer tells us how we can support fellow carriage drivers in Chicago. And on Carriages 101, Kathleen Hake introduces us to hunting vehicles. Plus, on the Tremont training segment, we learn about prepping young horses for performance tests. And there's no TCVM segment because we don't have enough time, but I'm going to talk a little bit about keeping our old farm doggies feeling great throughout the winter.
You slowed down as you went. Did you notice that?
I thought the fun part is kind of, I was losing it. It's getting not so funny after a while.
I think
you and I think it's funny because we've been recording for too long.
Yeah, no, we're a little punchy right now. Most people know that we do record this one ahead of time because Wendy has to work on Thursday mornings.
Yeah.
But thank you for joining us on the driving episode that we do once a month on the first Thursday of every month. Wendy and I have been doing the driving show together for about 10 years, seems like. I think it is about 10 years, actually.
No, it's 11 years.
And we do, by the way, still put these episodes out on the Driving Radio Show podcast feed. So if you want to find this specific episode, we put them out every month on the Driving Radio Show podcast feed. And we just updated that feed, so you can actually go on there now and find every episode that we've done. So if you look up Driving Radio Show on your podcast player, any podcast player, you're going to see all the past episodes, hundreds of them in there that you can go back and listen right on your player now. You don't have to go to the website or anything like you used to have to do. We only had 20 there before, but we've upgraded all the feeds and that's what's happening. So you can go back and listen to all the past ones. Well, we have Kathleen back with us from Carriages 101 from the Carriage Association of America. And this month we're talking about hunting vehicles, which came into prominence probably about the beginning of man and a wheel.
You would think so, yeah. But the hunting vehicles that we're going to talk about today really came into being after Louis XIV. At one point in time, he broke his arm while he was out hunting, and therefore he needed to be able to keep up with the hunt because he was not going to stop hunting. And therefore, they started developing vehicles specifically to take you out on the hunt if you were not able to go out on the horses. And from what I understand, he was quite the driver and kept right up with the hounds. He had a four-in-hand of ponies and was quite quick.
So what year would Louis XIV be?
Louis XIV, you're starting to talk 1600? About 1683.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
I believe is when he broke his arm. No matter what you think of hunting today, back in the day, it was not unusual for royal hunts to be, let's say, peppered with animals. They actually had carriages that they made to transport deer and other animals out to where the hunt would be so that the royal personage would be sure to find one. And not dissimilar to the canned hunts that we hear about today.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah, it was just the earlier version of them. But he was quite the driver. And then even back into the 1715s, he was still going out with the hunt. About 3 weeks before his death, he was actually out, and he took a small carriage. He was 73, I think, at that time, and still went out and hunted with them. He would hunt wolf, boar, deer, and fox. But those type of things happened quite a bit, and as a result, carriages were built with the ability to carry gun cases on the back, They, in some cases, they had the gun cases on the side. And they also would be have along the back. So the gun cases would be length horizontal along the back of the carriage, but they would also have gun mounts that ran vertical, so they would hold the stock of the gun. And in the 18th century, if you were going out to hunt game birds, for say, they would call the gun that you used a fowling piece. And they were very specific for hunting game birds. But they, you know, so things evolved over time, just like they do now.
Well, and back then, and it would have been black powder, too. It wouldn't have been what we're thinking of today.
Definitely not automatic.
Yeah.
They had the same problem that we have today, which is how do you let people know that the horses and carriage are coming so that they don't accidentally shoot at you? In this point of time, you know, wearing orange and some of the safety features that we have today didn't really exist. So they would actually put bells on the horses. And they did this in various parts of Europe. And I was, when I was in Spain 2 weeks ago, we were actually able to see just this amazing set of saddle bells. So they would have gone right behind the horse's withers. And this particular set of bells has three little sets of bells on it, but the artwork on it is just amazing. It has crossed, I believe those are rifles, hunting horns. It has all different, it has the stirrups that come down, and it's just an amazing piece of artwork. And I hope you are able to share that with your listeners as part of the link, but it's just, it's amazing. But that's how they used to keep the horses safe back in the day, because if you were out there on the where it's sandy, you don't hear the carriages coming. All the sound would have been absorbed by the ground. And so the bells were what they used to keep the horses safe.
So wouldn't it also scare away the animals?
No, because
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It was already a canned hunt, so, you know.
Oh.
I had like them tied to a tree somewhere.
Yeah, not quite that bad, but it, you know, they would go out and you know, they would hunt for quite a long time and on a regular basis. And it was there was an actual person whose job it was to make sure that there were animals there to hunt. Now, they used to get these vehicles, I think they're called wursts.
What?
You would actually sit, they were long. And you would actually sit on them astride. So this carriage, you can picture it, it's like, I don't know, maybe 15 feet long. The head of it is a head of like a stag or something like that, carved in wood. And then you would sit astride the centerpiece. And there was a groom in the front and some type of a footman in the back. But you would sit astride it. And that way you could carry your gun or whatever if you wanted to. And this is how they would go out. I'm not sure if you could shoot from it or not.
I was going to say, but I didn't even get any exercise.
Well, they weren't going out for exercise, but they actually had, in some of these vehicles, they had pivoting chairs so that you could just stay right on the coach or the brake and just pivot and do whatever you needed to do. And somebody that worked for you would go off and fetch the animal and bring it back. It was good to be wealthy back then.
Yeah.
Very good. Coming to this country, we see a little bit different types of vehicles. In Europe, some of them were painted. In America, when we talk about hunting vehicles, they're much more likely to be natural wood. And we usually refer to them as a sporting vehicle. Wendy's favorite vehicle, the Meadowbrook, actually came across about because of the fox hunting. We also had
people would go fox hunting in a Meadowbrook.
They would follow the hunt, and that's why
the hilltop.
So the Meadowbrooks are part of the Long Island cart family.
Yeah,
and so those were designed for the hunt in Long Island.
So they would hilltop with them.
Essentially.
Yeah,
you're essentially hilltopping. I don't think they called it that.
They don't have hills.
Yeah. It was pretty flat. It was much more interesting, which is part of why they have the fenders, because at that point in time, I think that that area would have been a little boggy still. And then we have the dog carts, which we've talked about before. And so that you could put your, they always have the ventilation on them, which is one of the ways that you can identify them, because they would put the dog underneath the seat. And so that you could, your dog wouldn't be tired by the time you got to the hunt. Typically speaking, when we talk about sporting vehicles, they're sometimes a little plainer. The details are just, they're different. It's not about the paint and about being flashy. They're about being practical, but yeah, mm-hmm. being elegant. So this particular one does have a top that comes up to make sure that the passenger, at this point, would be Augie Bush, and that would have been with the Clydesdale, the whole Bush beer type of thing, mm-hmm. Would have kept him dry. His driver, however, was out in the open. The driver's seat, I believe, folds up. So again, you would have been able to shoot out of the coach if you really had wanted to. Mm-hmm. This one being Pheasant, I'm not sure that he did or not, but it could hold a party of eight, their guns and their ammo. It has special brackets on the side to hold the guns. And it has, in this particular case, a wicker basket that the details on this wicker basket are just amazing. We covered it in the May 2018 Carriage Journal, which you can see online on Google. But it is just an amazing vehicle to look at. And again, the details are subtle.
And how many horses would pull that? Would they be with a pair?
Just a pair. Just a pair. Because there would have been a vehicle that came along behind you and picked up your game. Now, at the Georgia Museum of Agriculture down in Tifton, when I was going down to Florida in January, I stopped there. And they have a really different type of hunting vehicle there. And it's a hunting wagon. And that's more like the type of wagon that you or I might have owned. And on the side, it's has a box, and the box is where you put your guns. And in the back, it's has a more, I'm going to use the word crude. It's not truly crude, but it is by today's standards. At the time, it was rather ingenious location for the dogs. It allows them a lot more ventilation because in Georgia, it gets hot. And so if you had used the same ventilation that you would have had in some of these European vehicles that was a little cooler, your dogs would not have done as well. So this was a much more practical vehicle. But the thing that is really interesting on that vehicle is up at the dashboard, it has a, I'm going to call it a box. And you look at it and you're like, well, what is that? Maybe they put their lunches in it or whatever, but it's got a galvanized, I believe that's galvanized steel inside of it. And it's actually where they would put their water to drink. And it has a little faucet type thing on the bottom. But to keep their water cool while they were out hunting, they would have put that in the, it was on the front of the vehicle. And that vehicle would have been pulled by either mules or horses.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that you don't see every day.
Oh, no, that's so cool.
Yeah. And it's a very, very practical vehicle. It was meant to go through the brush of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And that particular vehicle is painted black. And this all started from my trip to Spain, where I saw these bells. I was like, oh, look at these. It was just an amazing set of bells. And they had several shooting breaks. We went to see one collection. It had 140 vehicles in it, I believe. And it was just absolutely amazing. If you ever get a chance to, and I say this whether or not I worked for the CAA or not, but if you ever have a chance to go on a CAA trip, they're well worth it. The things that you will see are just so interesting and unique. You don't necessarily see them any other way. And
highlight for you on this trip?
Actually, the highlight on this trip was we were happened to be in Madrid the same day that a couple thousand sheep went through. They have a 600-year-old agreement that the sheep can go through the center of Madrid once a year. And so we were there. We had just left the royal palace, and we got kind of caught up in this 2,000 sheep going down the middle of Madrid, and they were followed by there were some horses, you know, riders with them, and some dogs, and goats were in there too. But they were followed by these oxen carts, and I think in normal everyday terms they pull some type of a chuck wagon, but that particular day they carried a flat two-wheeled vehicle that you could see all the different brands that were on the sheep. And when I say brands, I mean they were painted on the sheep in this particular case. But it was amazing to see. We've never seen anything like that before. But there was a little Italian vehicle there that I would have taken home if I could only have fitted in this case. It was an experience. It was definitely an experience. But and you can see all for the photos on our Facebook page, which is the Carriage Association of America. I will be putting up photos from Spain probably for another month because I just took so many. But it's amazing. Next year we go to the Royal Windsor Horse Show, and then we'll also go to, I think, Germany in the fall. And so that should be really interesting as well. You would really enjoy it. Yeah, not a Meadowbrook in sight.
Oh, perfect. I'm going to get lots of hate mail from that, I'm sure.
And where can people find the CAA?
We are online at caaonline.com for our website, and our Facebook page is Carriage Association of America.
So, Wendy, what is the product feature of the month? I think it's about our puppies, isn't it?
It's about our puppies. You know, I always tell people this. 100% of horse people have dogs. That's why we talk about doggy things, right? And our farm dogs live a kind of different life than our suburban dogs. Farm dogs want to be with us all the time when we're at the barn. But, you know, they get old and they don't want to stay in the house. But in the wintertime, I have some tips that can help your farm dog be happier when he's hanging out at the barn with you. So the number one issue we have with farm dogs, of course, is old dog arthritis. And in Chinese medicine, we see that as wind, cold, and damp, right? Those are invaders to the system. And our formula, especially made for dogs, is called Doc's formula, D-O-K apostrophe S. And that's actually named after this German shepherd, Doc. And this formula was developed specifically for dogs. So it's an arthritis formula that we use in people. And then we've added some different things to make it specific for dogs. So this herb formula has some herbs I talk about a lot on the show. It has the two different angelicas, which is Du Ho and Dong Gui. And then also it has Du Zong, which is the rubber tree bark. And those help with arthritis and back pain. And then it has some herbs that will help with geriatric animals. So it has like a Indian mulberry, and it also has an herb that will help with bone activity. So the cells in your bones that they're called the osteoclasts. So some of you know that with arthritis in horses, we use a drug called OsFos. And what that does is it stops the cells that break down your joint fluid. Okay. And that's something similar with when people have osteoporosis. Those cells are what's attacking your bones and making them brittle and also attacking your joint fluid. And then, of course, these puppies are cold. So we use warming herbs to help them, like cinnamon, nutmeg, and fennel. I call them the Thanksgiving spices, right? Those are great for your puppy. And for food therapy for your puppy, I always talk about, because we live in Florida, so we always have hot issues. And I always say avoid lamb, venison, chicken, because those are hot foods. Well, in the wintertime with your older dogs, those are great options for them to help them, to help warm them. So my favorite recipe for old dogs in the wintertime is a congee, which is like a cooked rice pudding made with either chicken or lamb or venison. And you can use muscle meat plus organs. And you just mix up this congee and you can boil it for quite a while. And then add some winter root veggies and some Thanksgiving spices. So like winter root veggies are like sweet potato or pumpkin. And also, mushrooms are really great for older dogs. So you can imagine that sounds pretty good, right, for us to eat a congee like that. But for your puppies, if you cook it, it helps them digest it too. Because when they're older, digesting, you know, a lot of people feed raw food to their dogs, and that's good for young dogs. But as they get older, they need some help digesting. So also Tuina, which is massage, that can be super helpful. And one of the best things you can do for your old dog with arthritis is get him a new bed. We all wait. I'm looking at my dog right now, right? Her head is laying off the edge. She always likes a bed that's way too small for her.
Lori's that way too. She's always half on, half off, and it never looks comfortable.
I know. I don't know why they do that. But you know what? You need to get him an extra big bed.
I love buying beds for the dog, by the way. For some reason, buying beds is so much fun. Jennifer's like, the dog has more beds than we ever had. It's
like, no, I know, but getting them a new bed, because they do wear out. Even if you get the special foam, orthopedic foam.
Oh, I got to tell you
they
something.
Wear
she's
out
she's
over
prissy,
time.
Too, because we put sheets over the bed to keep it clean, you know, and then we wash the sheets. That way, you don't have to wash the bed. And if the sheets are there for more than a week, she will not lay on it anymore. You have to change your sheets. She doesn't want old
sheets. Well, because she's smart. Because she's smart.
Yeah.
So not only should you get new beds frequently, like every couple of months, but also you should change your sheets.
There you go. So where can people get the product and what's it called again?
So it's called Doc's Formula, D-O-K, Doc's Formula. And it's you can get it at drwendyying.com. Well, Mary Phelps of Horses Daily took her Shetland ponies to Europe to compete for Team USA and won the gold medal in cones. She joins us now to share her tales from her summer in Europe and to talk about her barn full of gold medal winning ponies. Welcome, Mary, to the Driving Radio Show.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Yay. Congratulations.
Thank you, and have something great to talk about.
We loved following your trip and your thousands of pictures you took. Loved it all.
Yeah, and that is just maybe 1/100th of everything that was recorded that hopefully gradually, bit by bit, I'll pull it together for the website.
Well, Mary, let's start from the beginning because, you know, some of our listeners are not necessarily drivers. You're famous in our driving world, so we all know you. But let's talk a little bit about your ponies and what kind of ponies do you drive?
I had just gotten a farm in Kentucky and said, oh, now I can finally have something of my own and wear a pretty hat and drive around and have some fun. You know, so that's how it all started with a Shetland pony that I got and then competed with, then got a second one and learned how to do pairs because they were so small that I couldn't really fairly do the combined driving, but didn't think it was fair to my little 10-hand pony. I couldn't have a navigator and all that. So I got a second. And I learned how to do pairs. So that's where it began. They were small and weren't that great, but we did a lot of competitions in Florida, and we ended up doing all the big ones because that's all they had down there.
Right.
And so they were fun and fast on the marathon. They weren't ever really that great in dressage. And about, let's see, I think this is we're going into our fifth year. I heard about these ponies owned by my good friend, Johnny Robb, who's a girl, Johnny Robb. She's a PR person in Wellington. She had contacted me about advertising them for sale on my website. And when she sent me the ad, I said, you know what? I might want them. And they were beautiful. They were a little bit bigger. They were paint. Buckskin, white, and black.
And, flashy.
Yeah, and their names were Al Capone and Bugsy Maloney.
Oh, so they came with those names? I thought you did those names.
They did.
Ah,
yep, they came with those names. And they're registered classic American Shetland, which in a nutshell is Shetland and Hackney. bloodlines. Okay, so that's where you get the movement.
So they're speed demons.
Yes, and they're hot, and you get the refinement and the movement and all that. So that's where it all started, and Gary Yeager had them. He had just started driving them together. Mm-hmm. And I went down with my husband, Wayne Humphreys, who you've had on the show. Mm-hmm. And he's been around and we have Stephan Oak Park Bouncer here in the barn in Florida.
Yeah.
And so we went down.
That's our first gold medalist in combined driving, little Bouncer.
That's right. Yes, exactly. And so, it was almost, I'm thinking, I've got to look, 5 years ago, because it was over Thanksgiving that we drove to Florida to look at Bugsy and Al. And so that's where it started. And I asked Bill Lauer to come over and take a look at them along with us. And we went into the barn and I headed them. You know, that means typically when you're hooking up a horse, you always have somebody standing at the head, mm-hmm. As extra security precaution. And Gary said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm heading them." And he says, "No, you better step aside." And so they kind of like, we were in the barn and Gary took off and cantered them around the field about 10 times for a while, and then they were ready to trot. So that was our introduction, and I loved them away. It was like driving a Maserati.
So then flash forward to now, were on Team USA to compete at the World Pony Championships.
I know. In 5 years. It happened. And
they have that competition?
It was in Kizbeer, Hungary.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was quite an adventure and journey. And for the past 4 years, three or 4 years, I have worked on and off with Bram Chardon,
mm-hmm.
who the driving world knows who he is. I had him come over here when he was just 21 after he had won his third Pony Driving World Championships. And we did a clinic and he drove my ponies intermediate at Hermitage because I just had, you know, one little carriage that I didn't have an advanced carriage and just wanted to see what they could do. And they flew around and actually ended up winning. So that's when I said, okay, you know, these ponies can do it. If he believes in them, I believe in them. I've been hearing a lot of, you know, getting a lot of energy saying that, oh, they're too small and they'll never be able to do it. And this year, Wayne and I we now have four ponies. So that are all the same coloring. We have Kimba, a mare, who's the smallest one. And then we have Tony the Pony. did change his name. It was Biscuit, but that wasn't going to cut it with us. So Tony is a six-year-old and very promising and doing a good job. So we did it. We went all the way. We went to the Chardons who were wonderful to take us in because they're so busy. And we were there for 3 months, July, August, September, and trained with them and immersed ourselves in that life.
Was that in Holland? Was that in Holland?
Yeah. It's very close.
How fun.
It was amazing, and it was.
And did you get to drive the ponies down the little beautiful Dutch roads?
Absolutely, yep. a lot of that I shared actually on my Facebook page. We went mm-hmm. into little villages on bicycle trails all along, and without, I mean, one of the first things I noticed about being there is that nothing seems to be a big deal to those people.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so if 25 bicycles is coming down the bike trail and you're on it, it's not a problem. And go out on a road and over there, people don't slow down just because you're in a horse and a carriage. They're used to seeing that, and they don't slow down.
So now tell us about your gold medal winning cones round. It seemed so exciting. I was like so happy for you.
Thank you. It was pretty amazing. We had had
what place were you in going into cones? Do you remember what place you were in going into cones?
Uh-huh. We had we were there in the pairs division. There were 38 entries.
Mm-hmm.
So after massage, we were I think around 28th or so. For us, we had a good dressage. And
you know, the dressage, you're competing against like fancy big dressage ponies. So
yep,
that's not bad.
Not bad at all. Bram was thrilled. Absolutely, absolutely thrilled.
Right.
And in fact, since then, we've even made more progress in that department. But then I'm the luckiest girl in the world because it was Bram who rode on the back of the carriage with me in the marathon.
Oh, great. So, you can't get a better navigator than Bram.
No. And he had just won the European Championships. What I learned just by being there, walking the course with him and other competitors, and how mm-hmm. he decides the routes and knows how certain moves are going to happen. And so we knew what we were going to do, and had the routes down. There were eight obstacles. And they were very, very long. And they were the smallest ponies in the whole competition.
Oh. What are they, 12 hands?
No, they're 11-3.
Oh, wow.
So after the marathon, we were in 19th place.
Oh, good. That's great.
So the way they do cones in a world championships is they have the... Out of the division, you know, they work their way up to the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So they have everyone up until the top 10 in the singles, pairs, and fours go in the morning. Then they take a lunch break, and then the top 10 single, pair, and fours go in the afternoon. They feature the top ones.
Right.
So we were in the lower half. And started to warm up, and the ponies were wild. I mean, they had just done the marathon, and mm-hmm. they were wild. And Kimba was leaping all over the place, and Bram just stayed calm. And he just reminded me, you know, just stay straight. Just one more stride when you get through there. Stay straight before you make that turn. We went through the course, and I was really focused, but a couple times I thought, you know, I don't think I've hit anything yet.
That's a great feeling.
I don't see anybody getting up to put a ball back on a cone yet. You know, I don't. And I think, I can't, wow, you know. And so we did the last movement. We had to make a bolt up to 17, 18, 19, and 20, and then gallop through 20, and I heard the announcer say, Mary Phelps, USA, clear. We had a little bit of time, you know, so we had 1.5 penalties, and I was thrilled. I mean, we did the world championships well. I mean, I was thrilled, but there were a lot more ponies to go. There were a lot more, and there was the top 10. And you know, I even went back and started packing the trailer and the camper. And,
time to leave.
And yeah, you know, I just started packing, and then I thought, you know, let me go back and see where I'm at now. You know,
right.
And I should get a picture of my name on the scoreboard because it looks pretty cool, Mary Phelps with the American flag. And lo and behold, I was still in first place. So then they had the top 10, and I thought, well, maybe I should watch this, you know. And
right.
See what. So Bram was with me, and Danielle Amant, who's the director of driving at USEF, and Dee Aldrich, who's our chef de keep, and Wayne was up in the stands watching. And the 10 start going, and then everyone had at least 1, 2, 3 balls.
Mm-hmm.
So I, by the time the top 10 started, I had moved up to, I think, 16th place, 16th
right.
or 17th. And then, which I was thrilled. I just thought that
right.
was great. Well, now there's going to be a couple double clears. You know, somebody's going to make the time, and but I was happy, and nobody made the time, and everybody had balls. And so
was your heart beating so fast while you were watching?
You know, I was stunned. That's pretty much. And even Bram looked a little stunned, I have
right.
to say. And, you know, and he said, and a couple of, and it was the small ponies that did well in the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and he says, well, this one always goes double clear. So just, you know, he was just downplaying it as much as possible. And then they had a ball. So finally, the number one pair, you know, that was in first place went in, and I could kind of tell just by the way they started out that they weren't going to make the time. They started out too slow, and then they had a ball, and Bram and I looked at each other, and we're like, we won the cones, you know, we won the cones division of the Pony World Championships in our first World Championships ever, with the smallest ponies, and I'm not ashamed to say my age. I'm 68 years old now, and I was the second oldest driver in the whole group, and we won. So it was just incredible, and of course, Bram was going to Europe for 3 months, and really focusing on training and really getting used to all that's involved at that level of horsemanship was the key, you know,
right.
It was the key.
Well, Mary, you're such an inspiration to everyone because, you know, when you drive little ponies, and you know, like my horses were just barely horses. So I also am like always cheering for the little guys. But it's so nice to see these little American Shetlands doing so great. And you and Wayne had such a wonderful time there. And you did a wonderful job representing the United States. So congratulations. We're so proud of you.
Thank you. And I just appreciate all the support that we had from U.S. Equestrian. And we did a fundraiser early on to help us because it wasn't cheap to do it this
oh,
way.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't charge you a lot less to fly ponies. So
it's the same price for the ponies.
Yeah, it takes the same amount of box stall. So.
Well, thank you, Mary, so much. And once again, we're so proud of you. And
congratulations.
We look forward to seeing the ponies
Pony power.
Again this year.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And thank you so much for having me on. It was really fun. Thank you.
time for our weekly chat with the American Driving Society.
So we have Dan is back from the American Driving Society, and we're so excited because we're only a few weeks away from the annual meeting, which is here in Florida. Dan, when is the annual meeting again, and where is it at?
Okay, the meeting starts on the 5th of December and runs through the 8th, and it is at the Grand Oaks in Ocala, which is the location that we've had it at for the last couple of years. Tom Warner and the people at Grand Oaks have been incredibly generous to us and welcoming, and they give us use of a lot of facilities. And this year, they're helping us put on an event, a driving event, which we have not done before at the annual meeting. So we're very excited about that.
Well, we are thinking about, Wendy and I are thinking about coming in on the Saturday. We actually have our big 12-hour holiday radiothon the Monday before. But what's planned for the Saturday?
Saturday is a pretty full day. Saturday starts off in the early morning with a driving derby.
Oh, those are fun.
We don't yet know how many people will be in it, but we have 15 entries for all of our activities so far, or for each of our activities so far. So we should have quite a number of people. We start off with that. Then we move to demonstration drives of our new dressage tests. And that's something we're really, really excited to be able to do. We have just put on our website this week our new tests. We have 3 at training level, 3 at prelim, and 3 at intermediate, as well as 6 arena driving trial tests. So that's 15 new tests. All at once, which is a first for the ADS in years. The tests are, to some extent, it's the same movements, obviously, because you can't really change all the movements, but they're in a different mm-hmm. order and in different places. And I've driven the training and prelim ones, and they're a lot of fun to drive. And I'm looking forward to using them in the training of my horses.
I didn't see any kiosks and passages added.
No. I've always thought it would be a lot of fun to try to do Piaf in harness.
I've done it unintentionally a few times.
But...
yeah, Glenn's actually...
I've done a lot of it unintentionally a few times.
I think we've all kind of slowed things down to the point where it came close. I have a couple of stallions, Lusitanos, that I own that can do fabulous Piaf and Passage, but they don't pull carriages. So I'm not sure how well that would work, but it'd be fun. So no, there's none of that. There is a little bit more movement using having the reins in one hand, which has caused a certain amount of discussion on the internet over the last week or so. We had previously a one-handed movement at prelim in our arena trial, but not in the outdoor tests. And now 2 of the outdoor tests have the driver taking the reins in one hand as they cross do a diagonal, and as they cross X, take the reins in one hand for a few steps. And it's really just a practice thing and a chance to experience driving with one hand in a straight line. So I think most people will find that pretty reasonable. We're going
to
do those.
And you don't have to get all upset about it. You know, like if you can't do it, then you just don't do it. And it's only one movement. It's not going to make a big difference, you know?
That's correct. And honestly, so, I think pretty much everybody at some time or another puts the reins in one hand and just goes forward.
How do you drink your champagne?
I like to do it just for fun. How do you scratch your ear? Exactly.
Yeah.
The two important things. I like to think people drink their champagne sitting still.
Dan.
But that's because I'm very safety conscious. I have no problem. And no texting and driving.
I've seen
either.
Wendy drink her champagne in every situation imaginable.
One of my friends was driving one of my ponies on Tuesday, and she was texting while she did it. And it just, you know, don't text and drive. It's just wrong. It's just wrong. After the dressage tests, we still have a whole lot that day because we have our annual meeting on Saturday afternoon. which this year there's no election, but I'm sure there's, as always, there's a lot of discussion. And then Saturday night is our gala, at which we celebrate the 45 years of the ADS's history and hand out a lot of awards. We used to have a hand out awards for various things during the course of the year. Now we do them all at the gala. So we will be doing our Young Driver Awards, our Calculated Intermediate and Prelim Championship Awards, our Dressage Awards, the President's Award, which I can't tell you about because that's a big secret, and Volunteer of the Year Award. Yes, it's a surprise. And, you know, just a whole bunch of stuff that was a big hit last year, and I hope will be just as big a hit this year.
So is there anything, to wrap this up, is there anything, if somebody lives in the area and they just want to come down and watch something, if they're not an ADS member, is there anything they can come watch? Or do you have to be a member?
They can come on. No, as far as I know, you don't have to be a member to come watch the combined test on Friday morning.
Okay.
And you don't have to be a member to watch the Derby or the demos.
Okay.
You do have to be a member to attend the annual meeting. You don't have to be a member to attend the gala. You just have to pay for it. And everyone is welcome at the party. And then Sunday morning, we have a board meeting, and that's for the board and for members.
Well, Dan, thank you so much. It's AmericanDrivingSociety.org is the website, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Well, our favorite endurance driver, Tony Troyer, is back to update us on the fight to save Chicago's carriages. Welcome back, Tony. It's been a long time.
Been quite a while. It's great to be on the show again.
Well, you know, I was on Facebook the other day, and I saw that you're like a big TV star now. You're on the news and, you know, fighting for the rights of commercial carriage drivers to keep driving in the city. Tell us all about what's been going on.
Well, as some people may not realize, I am vice president of the Horsemen's Council of Illinois. And I am also a carriage owner operator with a carriage business in Northern Illinois. And so part of my job is advocating for this particular situation with the carriage operators. And the city of Chicago, they've got some, the Chicago Alliance for Animals, that really have been causing some havoc up here. And I was on TV, yes, on Chicago Tonight, a PBS program, that we actually got some headway through that, showing that they really know nothing about horses.
Right.
And the summary of the whole show after watching it and everything, we were able to get them to basically admit that the only reason why it's inhumane is because they're breaking the ordinances. And really, that's two separate issues. So it just so happens today that I will be speaking with one of the aldermen up here, Alderman Emma Mitz, who is in control of the Consumer Protection Board that governs over the top of the carriage operators.
But Tony, just explain to us, because, you know, we're all horse people. And as a horse person, especially somebody doing combined driving, I look at these carriage horses and I think, wow, that's so easy. They get to just walk around. They get petted. They take people for rides on flat ground on the pavement. Like, it's so easy pulling. Like, what? Why are these people not wanting the horses in the city?
Well, first of all, you know, one of the things that was mentioned was the noise in the urban area. They're not meant to be here. And I pretty much gave that a debacle and summarized that these horses is what brought this city in, you know, that built the city. And they've, our training in a carriage for carriage operators, you know, these horses just don't go and get stuck in the city saying, okay, hopefully it'll work. No, there's a training protocol they go through, and you know, they look at any city, you know, those new the operators, when they bring in a new horse, they get them out there, and they got a certain level of training, and mm-hmm. they're used to the horns honking.
Right.
And you know, walking down the pavement, well, they think that's a bad thing. Well, if they're shod properly, I say yeah. it's okay. You know,
and
so
there's lots of hard ground in lots of different places. I mean, do these people even have any animals? Do they have any horse experience?
None.
At all?
None. She admitted that.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, how can they say what's good for animals if they actually have no experience with animals and no credentials with any animals?
Well, they might have the dog and the cat. Actually, the Chicago Animal Alliance for Animals does not have equine expertise or experience.
Well, you know what I think is really difficult for you guys as horse people is, you know, horse people are busy taking care of their horses and doing things. You know, they're not sitting around in front of their computer all day or lobbying politicians. So
exactly.
I think it's really a labor of love what you're doing, giving this much of your time, which, I mean, you are so busy anyways,
and
to help fight for horses.
And let's be honest. They don't care about all of that. They just want the damn horses out of the city, just like New York. They would rather none of us own horses, to be honest. That's what they really want, ultimately. You know, I said this when we covered this 10 years ago, Wendy, when we were talking to the people in New York, and we had the author John Katz on about it, remember? So it's not changed. They just don't want us owning animals that we do anything with. That's never changed. And it's still, but the problem is, because of everything that's happening, they're starting to gain headway, and I keep saying horse people better be aware, because this ball rolls downhill and it's going to take everybody out with it. It's just going to be one step at a time.
And yes, you're true, Glenn. That is totally true, because the next, we have to be in a forethought thinking of what is next when it comes to legislation inside Illinois or anywhere. What is next with the animal rights activists? You know what? You know, if they win this, what's next?
Well, and you know, racing isn't helping, because they're trying to kill themselves. I mean, over there, you know, that's a bad pun, actually, because so many horses are dying. They're doing it to themselves, and they don't seem to want to fix it. And you know, racing is going to be the one. The problem with the carriage driving thing in cities is it's so small and very few people, to be honest, care, right, in the general scheme of things. But with racing, it's so big and so popular around the world that people are noticing. And unfortunately, PETA and everybody else is noticing too. So the racing is going to be the one that I'm really worried about sending things over the edge. If they gain headway in racing, which, by the way, racing should clean itself up. There's big problems there. So you know, if they gain their headway in racing, you know what's for sports next? Next, eventing. Eventing's the other one they're going to target, because, you know, horses die in eventing. People die in eventing all the time. We've had a bad year in eventing, actually, around the world. So,
and at the same time, I mean, you can go another step of the, you know, FEI endurance.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that way. I mean, it's huge. And one of the key things that we're trying to do in Illinois is we are talking about the having the bill. Calvary Group has started it, and it's now in about 9 to 10 states, and it's the Working Animal Protection Act, and every state needs to have this bill go through. And it's not just for carriages. It's not just for horses. It's working dogs. It's that are not covered under the ADA. It is the, you know, the rodeos, you know, your 4-H events, everything, or any animal enterprise, petting zoos. you would not be able to have a petting zoo, you know. And
that's
and
cruel
like that.
And unusual punishment. You know, this is what's happening. It's taking the chance of people that aren't exposed to animals. It's taking their chance of being exposed to them away, so they get less and less sympathy for animals. It's a vicious cycle.
It is. But, and
Tony,
and
how,
that's where
we
and it's a catch 22.
Yeah. What can we do as horse people to help you guys in Chicago?
Right now, I think some of the biggest help that we can get is to keep putting pressure on the aldermen to talk, keep the talk going. Because at this point, they're wanting to shut it down without even having a conversation.
And they want to do that because it's easy. That's what politicians want. Oh, they want the easy thing, and that's easy. Well, Tony, we're out of time. Is there a place people can go?
Right now, the Safe Chicago Carriages, the Carriage On page. There's a lot of chatter on the Carriage On page, as well as the Calvary Group and the Horsemen's Council of Illinois page. So we're up here fighting today. I'm going to be talking to the aldermen, and we're setting up a game plan.
I found it on Facebook. It's Safe Chicago Carriages on Facebook as well, which I just liked. Thank you, Tony, for joining us again. We really appreciate it, and good luck in your fight, and we'll keep in touch, okay?
Thank you guys very much.
Well, the weather outside is frightful, but HRN is so delightful.
Time to get your voicemail entries in for the 5th annual Holiday Radiothon by Stateline Tech. It is your chance to win over $5,000 in prizes. What better gift can you receive at Christmas than cool horse stuff for you and your horse? Prizes this year include your choice of any Wintech saddle, up to a $1,500 value, or you could win a $500 gift certificate from Kelly Hurd Jewelry. Other great prizes from other great companies include Uncle Jimmy's, Kentucky Performance Products, Total Saddle Fit, Monty Roberts, Smooth Stride Jeans, Stateline Tack, Horse Lovers, Gene Abernathy, Cavallo Boots, BioStar, Horse Holster, Benefab, and many, many more. You have until November 18th to get your entries in. Visit HolidayRadiothon.com to see how to enter. That's HolidayRadiothon.com. Head on over today. You don't want to miss out.
Well, it's time for our Tremont training tip, and we have Kitty Cadwell here of Tremont Farm in Southern Pines, North Carolina, where she trains driving horses and ponies with her sister, Miranda. Welcome, Kitty.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Glenn.
Well, you've had such an exciting fall. You've been doing all kinds of things. But I see that recently you were just the big winner at the Friesian Young Horse Performance Test.
Yeah, so yes, busy between our combined driving horses and the Friesians. And yes, there was a curring out at Del Mar in California for the, you know, the FHA of North America, so Friesian Horse Association of North America. Mm-hmm. And they send judges over from Holland to look at these young Friesians and say, are they to the breed standard? Are they not to the breed standard? So it was really interesting and fun to go do that.
Oh, that sounds great. You know, like some people that may not be familiar with the Friesians, I mean, like what, tell us what the judges are looking for.
So it is a
pretty
Dutch
hair?
Breed.
Is it about the hair?
Pretty, very. Oh, very pretty hair, long manes. Wendy, I saw one whose mane went all the way down to his front ankle.
Oh my God. Did they get extra points for
Who
that?
Who wants to take care of that?
These people do. They love their big manes and tails, but they don't have to wash white socks.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yes, all black. So, yes, they look for a natural head carriage, big movement in front, powerful behind. And I went with Joan Fernandez and Friesian Focus, and we took a bunch of young ones there to get there. They rank them, and then they give them stars and premiums and ultimately for the mares a crown. So it's important in this breeding to keep the breeding, you know, right on target for what the Dutch want.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's good for young horses to be judged on performance. I mean, we've all had horses that just don't want to work. And you shouldn't breed ones with that attitude.
Right. So we took the two young mares, and the Frisians do what is called an IBOP test. And what it is it is a walk, trot, canter test for four-year-old and above. And it is in a, to me, rather small arena of 25 meters by 40 meters.
Oh, wow. And that's their driving. You had to drive in there.
Yes, the riding and the driving are in that. So I took the two mares and did the test with them. And the first mare, she got a very good score. And then the second mare went in and turned in a fantastic score. And the judges were super impressed and even came out to tell me that that was one of the best tests they've seen. Thank you for driving so well. And by the way, so far I was leading nationally in the IBOP score because these judges go all around North America looking at Frisians.
Oh, wow.
So then much to my surprise, Joan sends me the other day, they have sent her coolers and ribbons. And so, yes, we had the national best score for the IBOP test for young horses.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, very proud of her. It was Trinka. And even better, it was a homebred for Joan. It was from her fancy stallion that she imported, Monta, and one of her star mares.
Oh, she must be so proud.
Yes. And then, so I drove in the morning, and then they had to be presented in hand later in the afternoon. So we present her in hand later in the afternoon, and she ends up, Trinka ends up winning best mare, best of show, and they awarded her a crown, which is very unusual. So essentially, she is topped out now until she has a baby.
That is so great.
And yeah, we're very proud of her.
So special. Like, what are the things? What are the things that can get this Frisian diva her crown?
I think she's just show pony. She loves going to shows, and she loves to show off, and it shows in her attitude. So, you know, she has that big natural movement, and she is just happy to do her work. And like you said, showing them in there what they're meant to do, I think was a big plus for this mare to the judges, that they could see what she's capable of in actual work.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Frisians, they look pretty similar to each other, right? Because they don't really have any markings. So with this breed especially, not having a performance test, I mean, you know, what if you breed one that, you know, I have, remember my pony Izzy, my Welsh pony Izzy that I sold to Dale Govis? I had his sister. And I had his sister. I thought, oh, she's going to be great because she's Izzy's sister. That pony, like when she got sweaty, she would lay down because she didn't want to work. Like that.
Super tired.
Yeah, she's tired, sweaty. She doesn't want to work. But like that is not a performance horse. But she might look good on the end of a rope. So you maybe you want to breed her. But I mean, if we in America are going to breed quality sport horses that actually are for sport, then a performance test like this really can show like this mare has trainability and temperament to be a sport horse. And hopefully she'll get that to her babies.
People said, oh, good, now you can breed her. And I said, oh, no, she's young. She's 4 years old. I'm putting her in the four in hand. She's going right in to work with the big boys.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
So any horse that I've had, you know this, because you also have dealt in a lot of driving horses. Mm-hmm. When people come back to us, and I've sold mine for big fancy dressage horses or jumpers, or mm-hmm. they come back to us and they say, working them in driving as a young horse makes them so strong and so accepting of everything around them, because we do not shelter our horses. Yeah. They go out on the road, they see everything and they do everything, and it's the same at a show. So I feel like it helps, the driving helps them build a strong hind end. They learn how to move properly. And it also teaches them to just accept everything around them. So it makes for really well-rounded horses, I feel like. Riding and driving is good for them.
You know, I think, too, with the driving, which is what I kind of realized when I started driving, is they have to be obedient, but they have to also think on their own, because you're not sitting on them. So sometimes when you're sitting on them, you're constantly telling them what to do with your body, you know? But when you're driving,
well, you figure.
You tell them to park and they have to park and then, like, you know, talk amongst themselves until you're ready to do something.
That's exactly right. Because you figure when you sit on them, even if you don't think about it naturally, you use your seat and your legs and mm-hmm. you shift body weight. All we have in the carriage is those two little thin lines to their mouth.
Yeah.
That's all we have. So we have to teach them, yes, to think for themselves and to listen to us. And yeah. pay attention to their job. And yes, standing is an important part of that.
Well, congratulations on your great weekend. It was so interesting to hear all about this performance test.
Yeah.
And we look forward to talking to you for your next training tip next month.
Perfect.
Dr. Wendy, where can people find you and your store?
You can find me at drwendyying.com. That's drwendyying.com.
And of course, you can find all the past episodes of this particular episode of Horses in the Morning at drivingradioshow.com. You'll find them all there. And we'll be back tomorrow. It's Friday, so really bad ads day. Get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We thank our sponsors, the American Driving Society and Dr. Wendy Ying. And all of you, our patrons, our auditors, we really appreciate you as well. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you all tomorrow.
All right, keep the shiny side up.